Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, everyone? This is Courtside with PLR, and of course, this is PLR. Hope everyone is having a great night. Thank you for joining us at this special time, 8:30 on a Wednesday evening. We have a lot of basketball to get into this evening, and we are filled up with a lot of crazy shenanigans going on, a lot of hyperbole we're getting into, and some other nonsense, along with some basic facts. We are brought to you by Maduro's Fine Cigar and Tobacco, located on Alma School and Chandler Heights in Chandler, Arizona. Hey, get down there. Let them know that PLR from Courtside with PLR sent you, and they will take care of any cigar purchase you have by taking 10% off of the total price. You can take your cigars home, but I suggest checking out the humidors and the lounge. They're backed up. Actually, I should have said at the club, they're backed up to a humidor. So you can leave your stuff there, buy your cigars, sit down, relax, watch one of the many big screen televisions they have. Or if you don't like in the lounge area, not a problem. You can step right out into the main area. And again, another five or six big screens for you out there to watch. So get down to Maduro's Fine Cigar and Tobacco, located on Alma School in Chandler Heights. Let them know that PLR sent you. Before we go any further, we have a special guest online with us. It's been a while since he's been on, but you know how big timers do. You, they get big, they get huge, and they forget the little guys along the way. That happens a lot. You would think we were in Hollywood. We're not. I know we're in Arizona, but there's still some big timers out here, and I have one online with me now. I call him Fleegs, but you guys know him as Kyle Flieger, former writer for the Valley of the Suns and a huge basketball guy. Fleegs, what's going on?
You know, just working and trying to keep up with the playoffs and the draft and who are the Suns going to take. And, you know, that's kind of my area of focus is the Phoenix Suns. So I'm excited, man. This is a great time to be a basketball fan.
Listen, I want to address that first. You talk about the Phoenix Suns. I want to start with that before we move into the playoffs. Why are Suns fans sad in the night of the ping pong balls, the lottery? They have the fourth pick. As long as you're in the top six in this draft, you're fine. I don't get the down heads and the yelling rigged. And what is going on with Suns fans? You have the fourth pick in the draft.
Now, I think it's debatable whether or not the draft is six players deep. I think that there's a significant drop-off between Josh Jackson and Jason Tatum in that you have an elite scorer in Fultz. He does not very good defensively. Lonzo appears to be a two-way player and kind of a visionary as a big passer. And then Josh Jackson's elite defensively, and obviously if he can put together a consistent shot, seems like a guy who will stick at the wing position and start at the wing indefinitely. Tatum, there are a lot of questions, you know, and so I think Suns fans are kind of scared. Everyone thought the top three picks, you know, that was where we were guaranteed, you know, a future Suns all-star. And after that, it's kind of a question mark of, you know, what exactly do you do? So I think that, and also it's just this one pure fact, Paul. The Suns have never in their history improved their draft position via the lottery. That's a sad fact.
You know what? I understand. But I think Suns fans should be thinking big picture here. And the big picture is, would Josh Jackson be nice to have? Yes. But the real, I think the smart thing to do is to package that pick and get a player that can play. There comes a point where you have too many young players. Marquese Chris isn't 20. And he's your starting power forward. One of the best up-and-coming two guards is Devin Booker. He can't even legally buy a drink yet. Eric Bledsoe, who was shut down for the sake of shutting down for quote-unquote tanking, well, rest slash tanking, he's barely 25. There comes a point where you have too many young people, and you have to get someone that can actually play. And I would honestly be more interested with them packaging that and trying to find someone like a Jimmy Butler who has 2 years left on their contract to come in and play that small forward position as opposed to taking yet another young guy.
I can see why you think the Suns could benefit from that. I think there's logic to using the asset to get a star that's somebody who can make the Suns more competitive immediately, but this sounds crazy, but I think a lot of teams right now, and the Suns may be one of them, are in a position where they're going to let Golden State and LeBron, assuming he's in Cleveland indefinitely, we'll say Cleveland, they're going to let them fight it out. They're not worried about it. That's why I think Boston's going to keep the pick. Is even though they were in the Eastern, they're in the Eastern Conference Finals right now, I think they see their timeline as further out. And I know the Suns do. And, you know, with Phoenix, you have to really evaluate if you make a move and you trade Marquese Chris and Dragan Bender or the fourth pick in Marquese Chris and you get back, let's say, Jimmy Butler, which it would, I think it would take more than that. I think the Bulls would laugh in our face. I think the Bulls were, you know, they were considering not trading Butler for the overall first pick, right? And so I think the Suns have an uphill battle trying to get Butler. I think it's going to take more than that. And they have the assets to do it. So, I mean, if they wanted to make it work, they could. But Jimmy Butler, they're not good enough around Jimmy Butler. I mean, what does Jimmy Butler do? Take them from a, you know, 25-win team to a 40-win team? Is that good? I mean, is that where you want to be?
I think it's time that you sniff the playoffs. And what I'm worried about happening is for 7 years, they've not made the playoffs and they've had a losing, I don't want to say a losing mentality, but a losing acceptance with the excuse that they're young, except the 1 year where they had a ridiculous season and thought they were a player away. Now, in saying that, what I think Jimmy Butler does is here's a guy that was on a playoff team. He's and I'm not saying Jimmy Butler, Jimmy Butler type, but they have to have 2 years left on their contract. If you can bring him in and get him acclimated with the Devin Booker, with an Eric Bledsoe, this team can be better than Portland. And I think it would be better than Portland. And Portland snuck in the playoffs this year. And now you're not constantly drafting from a lottery position. You're actually having some players that are helping you move forward. So when this time comes, see, the one thing I don't like about the NBA now is something that you just said. We're going to let Golden State and we're going to let Cleveland run their course. See, in the West, that's dangerous. Steph Curry's 27. Klay Thompson's 26. Durant's 29. Their course may take 3-4 years to run. You have to, at some point, make the jump to get better. And the Suns are one of the few teams with the talent and the assets to do that. And I just don't want them waiting around again. And I would hate to see Marquise.
But who should they get?
I think you go after a Butler. I think you go – look, they went after LaMarcus Aldridge. Why not go after Gordon Hayward? Why not go after –
That was in free agency.
That's fine. But if you can get Jimmy Butler in a swap – okay, so let's go this route. So what I would say to any Suns fan is you're telling me you would rather have that fourth pick that everyone clamored about or – after that, there's only guards, and the last thing I want to do is see him draft another guard. Especially at four, there'll probably be Kentucky guards. We have enough Kentucky guards. So you want to get another guard as opposed to get someone that's actually established in the NBA that we know can play. Because, Kyle, the one thing that I said on I said last week on the show was the difference between drafting now and drafting back in the good old days, you knew that if you got a Tim Duncan, you knew that if you got – of Vince Carter, you knew if you got these players, you knew what you were getting because they were developed. You're drafting on only potential. And I mean, we were happy that they drafted Devin Booker, but no one in their wildest dreams thought that Devin Booker would be this quickly along right now with the, at the brink of emerging to a superstar. We didn't know that. No one could say, well, this is going to happen because we're always drafting on potential. It's time to get someone in here that we know that can play.
So I think you've exposed kind of the fork in the road for the Suns because I think you are correct about the timeline. I think it is 4 years, 5 years, the remaining window for the existing top elite teams. I think that the Suns' timeline for their best players to be great, I mean, in 4 years, Bledsoe would be 30, Booker would be 23, Bender would be 21, 22, Marquise would be the same age. I mean, that's still a really young team. And I think overall they may want to be in that position. I mean, that may be where they want to be. And I think it would take the 4 pick this year. I think it would take the lottery pick for the Suns next year and probably Marquise Chris or Eric Bledsoe, you know, in order to even get Jimmy Butler. I think you'd be looking at the 4 pick and Eric Bledsoe just to get Jimmy Butler. And then what do? You run – how many games are you winning with a starting lineup of Tyler Ulis, Devin Booker, Jimmy Butler, Alex Len, or Tyson Chandler, or whoever, and you're running small ball 4 with T.J. Warren? Or
From what I'm hearing, and I could be wrong, Kyle, but from what I'm hearing from someone in Chicago, not saying the Bulls would take the pick, but they don't want Bledsoe, to be perfectly honest with you. They're more interested in the pick this year, a pick next year, a T.J. Warren. And from what I'm understanding, if the Suns are smart, they would insist that you take Knight off their hands. But they may still – if they can keep Bledsoe, if they can keep Booker, and they can keep Chris in the deal, is there anyone else on this team that's untouchable?
I mean,
honestly.
I think they're rolling the dice with the potential, and you're right on that. Like Dragan Bender, I know he had an underwhelming season for most people. I think he's going to be impressive this year. I think that at times he showed an ability to pass the ball that's elite for his size, and I think he can defend multiple positions. I think he can defend smaller and bigger players once he gets a little bit bigger. I see him as a true stretch 5 in the modern NBA. And so what do you think of this? Because I don't know. Let's say you're right that they can get Jimmy Butler. That's one way to take it. You've got Bledsoe, Booker, Butler, and let's be – Marquise Chris was like a 12-7 guy, so that's not like firepower at the power forward and center position with those three guys. You're defensively going to be awful on the interior, Phoenix, and that's going to be –
still got Tyson.
Really, yeah, but Tyson's old, man, and he gets hurt every time he plays more than like 50 games, 60 games. They were really good about – tempering his time. They shut him down, you know. So, but I think another angle the Suns could go just as easily is to trade the pick for more picks. Like, tell me that the Kings won't trade 4 for 5 to move up one spot because they fell in love with a player and package, you know, a later pick or next year's pick, or that the Magic, who have 2 first round picks, you could trade 4, move to 6, and then also get 25. So you get 6 and 25 for 4. And in a draft this deep, I think you get one guaranteed starter who's as good. I think Jonathan Isaac is as much of a pro prospect as Jason Tatum. Not as high of floor, but a higher ceiling. And you get Jonathan Isaac to play the wing position for you instead of Josh Jackson. And then, you know, at 25, you take a chance on, you know, somebody with size that's young, and or you got another option there in a pretty deep draft. So... you know, I don't know. The Suns have done pretty good with later picks. So I think that's another strategy, but they're going to have to go one of two ways, and I think draft night is going to be a big signifier of what they're thinking.
You said a word in there that is the word that is killing me right now. They get another pro prospect. At what point, and I'll say this because I'm going to compare it to another sport. The Bears had needs at cornerback, safety, linebacker, defensive line, offensive line, wide receiver, and possibly a tight end. The only position they have is a running back, and they went out and drafted a quarterback and gave up a pick and picks to get a quarterback that's not even going to play possibly to next year. Now, I understand they may be forward-looking, way forward-looking, because they still have all those other needs. Sell that pick to a fan that you stunk for the last X amount of years. You've been to Suns games this year. Nobody comes to see the Suns. They come to see the opponents. The ship has sailed on us right now in terms of the fan and the fan support. And this team, for years, was the anchor of the sports society because they're the only team, at first, the longest-running team that's true only to Phoenix. And now people don't even come to see them because they've set that tradition of losing. And I don't care how good young players are and how what programs they come from that win – you lose for 3-4 years, that gets old really quick. And now you stand a chance to lose players, or justify giving in 2 or 3 years. You're going to have to re-up Bledsoe. You're going to have to re-up Book. And now you're going to have max players on a losing team. That makes no sense to me.
Would you trade T.J. Warren, the number four and the number four overall pick, and Dragan Bender for DeAndre Jordan?
I wouldn't trade that much for DeAndre. I don't think DeAndre Jordan is even a third team. I think if they didn't have to have a center, he shouldn't even be an all NBA player. I think he's so.
Yeah, I mean, I think there were better centers than him this year. I don't think he was top three, but I think he's a top five center, and I think he's murder in the pick and roll.
With one person, he only plays well with one person. We're gonna get Chris Paul too.
Well, we don't know. He's only played with Chris Paul.
When Chris Paul has been out, he's terrible. Well, you know what? I shouldn't say terrible. He is so limited offensively. And yes, I know he rebounds. And yes, I know he defends. But hell, I'm being very facetious when I say this. Hell, JaVale McGee has done that this playoffs. I just don't think where the Suns are right now that they should get another guy that can't score. The Suns are heavy and dependent on two guys scoring, and it's their backcourt. Until they get reliable front court scoring and reliable front court playing, I'm talking about making a trade for possibly the number two or three best two-way player in the NBA, not going to get a center that plays one way.
Yeah, I mean, I see where you're going. I just, when I'm looking at the Suns, I think that when I look at the league, a lot of it is made out of the offense and the three-point shooting. But the two best records in the NBA this year were the two best defenses in the NBA. And Cleveland, since they started the playoffs, have been one of the best defensive teams in
because
the playoffs.
Because they haven't played anybody.
You know, so, yeah, sure. But they have been actually caring about defense. So we know LeBron is one of the best defensive players in the league when he decides he's going to be one of the best defensive players in the league. And that team is good. It's really hard to be good in the league now if you can't be good defensively. And the Suns are god-awful on defense. They're terrible. They need defensive upgrade at, like, every position. Bledsoe used to be tenacious. Now he's taking it easy, I think, for health reasons and isn't getting into people like he used to. He used to be like Patrick Beverley. He used to be a terror to have to play against. You could tell the opposing point guard was wore out by the end of the night because Bledsoe would just wear them down and be in their business the entire game. They don't have that. Booker's terrible at defense. I'm sorry. I love Devin Booker. He's one of the worst defensive shooting guards in the NBA. He just doesn't execute the principles, and he doesn't use his size to be a competent defender. You know, T.J. Warren improved, not good. I mean, there's nobody good on their team in defense. Nobody. You know?
So my proposal is trade for one of the best defenders in the league.
Yeah, but I mean, they need. I agree. I like. Don't get me wrong. If they can get Jimmy Butler for the fourth pick, and next year's first rounder, I think they should do that all day. You know, I think that and T.J. Warren
take Brandon Knight.
That would be wonderful if you can make that trade happen. I think the Suns would take it. I don't think Chicago will.
I just think they have to look to go another direction. You know, like I said, a couple of years ago, they went hard after LaMarcus Aldridge. They need to go hard after someone else. They need to go hard after a Gordon Hayward. You know what? Even if it's for show, let your fans know that you're trying to move forward. Organically, I understand that you can build a team. That's what Golden State did. I completely understand that. They got their core, but then they went out and made trades. They went out and brought in Iguodala. They went out and brought in Bogut. They went out and brought in Sean Livingston. So, yeah, they had their guys with Draymond and Clay and with Steph, but they went out and got these other guys so they could make that next step. The Suns have not gone out to get anybody else to make that next step, and that's why every year they're in that 24 to 32 win set. They haven't made that move yet.
They're superstar searching, right? Because what you said is true, but the fact is that the Warriors hit on three all NBA players. Like, all three of their internal players that they have that they drafted are all NBA. The Suns don't have any. So if the Suns are hoping that, the, but the they didn't start out that way because they had to progress in their careers. But the fact is within 5 years of them being drafted, they were all NBA players. And I think what's interesting is the Suns are just trying to figure out, do they have any? I think we think Devin Booker will be one. I think Bledsoe is one. I don't think Bledsoe's all NBA. I think that there's five better point guards in the Western Conference. But
True. But hell, even this year, Chris Paul was an all NBA player. So I just think he's good enough to get them to that next step. But you got to have guys. You know, it's funny. San Antonio and kind of reminds me of what the Cardinals had this year. Well, next man up. When you look at the end of the bench and there's not another man, there's no one else to come up. Suns have no one else. And I just, it's just patience. I understand you got to have a certain amount of patience, but there's been 6 years of patience. And in that 6 years, look at out of all the draft picks that you've had, you mean to tell me that a Markieff Morris can go on to Washington and help a playoff team? And we know all the stuff with the Morris twins here. We understand all that. We haven't heard a peep out of him trouble-wise in Washington. A peep. We got real players that could play. Dragan, gone. Now, I'm not saying I'm sad to see some of these guys go, but at the same time, what have we really done to make it to that next level when teams like Portland can get rid of 80% of their starting lineup and come back the next 2 years and make the playoffs? How are they trading for guys like Nurkic that's up and coming and can play, and we're not getting those guys? I think there comes a time where we have to start saying, what are these other teams doing that we're not? They're getting to the playoffs with Noah Vonleh. Have you seen Noah Vonleh play? I don't know if he plays worth a
superstar in Dame Lillard. Like, you have to have stars. CJ McCollum's really great, you know? I think that.
But he came out of nowhere.
Yeah. I mean, he was a first round draft pick.
Right. But what I'm saying is, the year before, CJ was 13 points a game. But they designed offense around them. They did a lot of different things. You mean to tell me a team with Dame Lillard and CJ McCollum and a bunch of bums until Jokic got there, they were better than the guys that we can roll out?
But
with
they thought
CJ.
they thought they were signing good players, right? They thought Evan Turner was going to be a player. They thought Alan Crabb was going to be a player. They thought these guys. They thought, you know, they got Al-Farouq Aminu that they thought was going to be a player. They thought all these guys were players.
And where are they?
They're wrong.
In the playoffs. They're in the playoffs.
Yeah. But would you rather be them or the Suns? I'd rather be the Suns. I'd rather have the fourth pick.
I'd rather be them. And here's why. Because you got two guards that can play. You pulled the trigger on a big man that can play. And now, you know what you can go out and say to some other free agents now? Hey, look, we're making a move and we're going in the right direction. You know what the Suns can say to free agents right now? Well, we got some young talent and we think they could play. You've got to attract a real good free agent. And that's why I said you got to make the push, even though they're not going to sign here. You got to make the push to make your fans think that you are going for it. But there comes a time where you have to say, man, it's been a lot of years, and not one free agent will sign here. The only free agents the Suns get here are guys that have come back to the Suns for the third time or guys that are coming here to try to prove that they can play so they can go play somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, it's not good. You know, I think that the Suns have always struggled in free agency, but what they're trying to do is create a culture that it makes people want to come play here. I don't know that they're successfully doing that yet, but
that's a good joke.
You know, I think one of the interesting things is though that Robert Sarver kind of told us what he thinks. He you know, Ryan McDonough still has a job, and that makes me think they're going to, despite what you would like to see happen, Paul, they're going to go with the strategy that would indicate they're going to try to continue to draft young talent because that's what he does. And I think you're going to see a trade. I think you're right. He's going to have to do something because his job's on the line. It's his last year of his contract. And if the Suns don't show the ability to be on the right track, it's over for him.
And you know what? I love Ryan. Honestly, I do. I think Ryan is great. I've co-signed and put the cape on for a lot of stuff that he's done. And to be honest with you, I don't want to see him go because I'm really doubtful that they're going to get an established GM in here that wouldn't blow the whole thing up. And then guess what? We're starting all over again in another direction. So the last thing I want is for Ryan to leave. I just think we have to be aggressive and going to get someone. And it just makes me look back and say, wow, the Portland Trailblazers can go and get a guy that can play that's a big man, and we can't. We had almost a guaranteed lottery pick that we could have sent to Denver, and they got someone? It's like, how is that possible? It's like, we traded, the Denver Nuggets traded a guy to Portland who doesn't even have a good pick, to Denver knowing they were going to be in a lottery, and all they wanted to do was make room for their other good big man to play. And we couldn't execute that trade. We couldn't
look I agree.
At that. So those are the things that I say that I think get frustrating to me. But, okay, enough with the Suns. Let's get on with the playoffs. And let's get on with something that is driving me absolutely nuts. And I know where this is the show. I can't believe we spent that much time on the Suns. But I heard someone say two things. I want to dispel this, and I want to be done with this. And I don't want to take, like, a 1,000 minutes talking about this. LeBron is not Jordan. He is not better than Jordan. He will never be better than Jordan. I'm not talking about and I'm not even going to get into the six rings, and I'm not going to get into the, well, Jordan never, yeah. I heard someone today say on the television show, Jordan never missed a dunk. Jordan missed a dunk in a 1992 playoff game against the Knicks. Yes, I'm that old. Yes, I remember the game. Our revisionist history is going to say Jordan never missed a game-winning shot. He did. Jordan never did this. He did. Jordan, great. But it's chasing this ghost to me is what's killing. It's tiring me. I think it's time for LeBron just to be the best LeBron. So people can say he was one of the top whatever in NBA history. But this chasing, well, if he wins this one, that puts him at this. Now he's – no, you're not. I don't want to throw stats, and I'm not going to throw the stats. But it's just not. It takes more than that. Tom Brady is one of the greatest quarterbacks that ever played. And we have a very good friend that says, well, now he's got five. He passes Joe Montana. No, because you know what? You could beat Joe Montana down back in those days. You could actually hit him. Because they hit Brady a certain way, we have a Brady rule when it comes to hitting quarterbacks.
All right, but Jordan, first, two things. One, Brady is better than Joe Montana. We're not going to get into that. Two, you're right, Jordan is better than LeBron. And it's not a question. It's not something that people should be constantly obsessing over and comparing. Although LeBron is one of those people who actively makes that comparison. So he's kind of inviting and putting that into the media. But I want to ask you a question, because this is all I care about on this subject, and I'll keep it short. Two questions. Do you think Michael Jordan is the greatest basketball player ever?
Yes.
What would it take to be better? Like, even if you're adjusting for era and you think this era is soft and that era was harder, and it takes 10 NBA championships in order to qualify as better, where you'd be willing, and you have to be the elite scorer, whatever you want to say, 15 consecutive first team all NBA, however outrageous it needs to be before you're willing to say out loud as a Chicago fan that Michael Jordan is number two. Like, what is there an answer to that question?
Here's the deal. If LeBron played on the Bulls his entire career and had the exact same career all in Chicago, I would still say the same thing. What Jordan did from a two position in an era of big men, because remember back when he played, it was still a big man's game. There was still like,
but what would it take? That's what I want. Is it possible?
I have to see it. I would have to see, my eyes would have to tell me that, because unlike this era where everything is 90% analytics, I still believe what my eyes tell me, and I'd have to see it. I don't think it's all scoring. I don't think it's all anything. Look, Isaiah Thomas to me is the best little man to ever play the game. There's no stat that I can say, well, you know, Iverson scored more than him. Okay, well, John Stockton had more assists than him. Well, okay, but I saw Isaiah take a team from absolutely nothing and build it in his image, take out the reigning bad boy, the true bad boys in terms of what they've done in their history of their team, the Celtics, push them to the side, win two titles. To me, he's the best little man under 6'2 that's ever played this game. Stats won't back that up, but my eyes saw him play. So that's what I'm saying. I don't think there's a stat. you have to develop and show that. Look, we talk about big men all the time. We talk about all these big men, and Akeem Olajuwon is one of the top 3-4 centers that ever played. Yes, he has some stats, but my eyes told me that. I don't need to hear Tom Haberschall tell me, well, per possession and games decided by less than 4 points on days that end in Y, this player. No, you can see basketball is one sport you can look at and you can tell who can play and who can't play. Dame Lillard is a top point guard, but I'm going to ask you this in reference to that. Has Dame Lillard's game improved over the last year and a half? Or is it the exact
Not
same
really.
Game it has? Not really, but he's still a very good guard. And if you look at his numbers, you'll say, dang, in this team playoff, that's pretty good. Elevating his team. Has his game changed since he hit that game winner against Houston to move Portland on 3 years ago? His game hasn't gotten better. But that doesn't mean he's a bad player. So that's my point. I'm not saying I can give you this stat to say this or to say that, but my eyes will tell me if I'm alive, you know, that long to see it, who can possibly be greater. And that's the only way I can answer that.
I don't think you'll ever agree. I don't think a player could do it. I think LeBron could win 10 championships and be finals MVP 7 times, and Michael Jordan fans, and they may be right, Michael Jordan fans will still say Michael Jordan was better.
You know what? I will say this. I think Kobe's better. If I had to pick between LeBron and Kobe, I'd still take Kobe.
You're crazy.
I'm dead serious. I'm
LeBron
dead serious.
LeBron would eat Kobe's lunch.
Well, you know what? He hasn't ate 5 of them yet, and Kobe's been to that table 5 times.
That's true. Can't deny that.
So
Is Chris Bosh going to be on the Cleveland Cavaliers next year?
Who knows? He may be Dwayne Wade, too. May bring them all back together. I think Chris Bosh does an excellent job of being a commentator, and I just don't want to see him with a bad fate on the court. I mean, this man has nothing left to prove. He's been an All-NBA player. He's a Hall of Famer. People can say what they want about him. Miami doesn't win if he's not there. And he's led. You know, he's been a great scorer in this league. Passer. Just seems like an all-around good person. I just don't want to see anything bad happen to him. And I know it's not the way he would want to walk away from the game, but heck, I'd rather see him walk away from the game than leave the game a whole different way.
Yeah. If the doctors clear him, I think it'd be kind of cool to see him go to Cleveland.
Yeah, man, but you know what, though? I'm older than you, and I saw that Hank Gathers game, man, and I never want to see that again.
Yeah.
You know, I just, especially for such a class guy. And like I said, it's easy for me to say that because I'm not an NBA player. And guys have the right to leave the way they want to leave. I just think he's so good, man. He has nothing left to prove.
Yeah. I mean, he's really good, as you said, on TV. And, you know, he's super intelligent and extremely gifted speaker. And, you know, he offers really cool insights and most of the topics he discusses, and makes the game a lot more relatable. And, you know, he's going to do a really good job, I think, in his next career. So I agree with you. I think he could easily just hang it up, call it a day, and, you know, be successful in other areas in life. But I don't know. Part of me wants to see him play basketball again.
In the last 18 days, Cleveland has played 4 playoff games in the last 18 days. I am frustrated, and I do not want to hear LeBron is tired. I'm being honest with you. I don't want to hear he's tired. I know that's kind of changed, but I don't want to hear that crap. The whole point that he rested all those games during the season was that he wouldn't be tired. I don't want to hear he's fatigued. I think that's a cop-out. That he's not saying
fatigued.
He's tired. He's not saying it. But when I hear announcers say, well, he may be tired and this is why players need to rest, bull crap. How can he be tired? 8 games. 8 games. Everyone else is in the same position.
I'm with you 100%. I don't think he was tired. I think he was in a – you know, LeBron is a really moody guy. And he has had flare-ups in playoff games before where he just kind of no-showed in different moments. And – it doesn't surprise me ever when LeBron starts to struggle and he lets it affect him for the rest of the game and gets in his own head and pouts, and he's susceptible to that. And
that's why he'll never be better than number 23.
Well, I think he's working on it. I think he's getting better with it. I think 5 years ago he was a lot easier to rattle, but I think his time in Miami, you know, where he was kind of the villain after the decision, kind of made him better at tuning out kind of the noise and staying more even keel. But we'll see. You got to be excited for Cavs Warriors, though. I mean, it's going to be awesome.
You know what? I think the Warriors are going to win in six, and I think Kevin Durant is going to be the MVP. And I say that because Kevin Durant, as we talk about guys that can check out in big moments, there is a difference in his game this year as opposed to last year. And you know me, I don't care about efficiencies. I don't give a crap about all that analytical crap. I'm talking about looking at the way he's played and he's mentally at ease. Because even though I honestly think he really likes Russell Westbrook, and even though I really think he liked playing with him, I think for some reason there was this tug of war that these two had, and that wore him out after a while. In Golden State, there really isn't that tug of war. Steph Curry has almost relented to say, look, I know how good you are. We're just going to run it through you no matter what. And Kevin Durant, because he knows that's the possibility, he has no problem. He doesn't feel that same tug of war. So I think there's a difference. And this will be the first time in the playoffs that LeBron James will actually have to play real defense, because Paul George's stupid game going to overtime, or this game ain't going to overtime. He's usually right because he's usually missing the shot. So
he always misses. He's never made it.
Yes, he did. No one's giving him credit for this. I saw him beat the Suns with a bank shot one time, but that was regular season. I know they're talking playoffs. But
was it a buzzer beater?
It was a buzzer beater. It was here.
Yeah, I just don't remember him. Did it tie the game or it won the game?
I thought it won the game because I remember being there. I thought it was a winning shot. But
maybe. Either way, he's. I think they said he's 2 for 32 in his career.
Exactly. So maybe that's the one. So LeBron didn't really have to. He didn't really play. We know he half-hearted played defense, and he didn't have to really chase anybody. Then he played Toronto. He didn't. He took all his time off on the defensive end, and now he's playing Boston. Jay Crowder. This will be the first time he's really had to play defense against his man. Not help defense, but against his man. And I think all this is going to level out. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I see no way possible. If Golden State goes into this healthy, there's no way possible that they can match up there's no way possible Cleveland can match up against Golden State because of Durant. And if you go back to last year, LeBron didn't put his balls on Draymond Green's neck, which I would have pushed you off to. I'm not going to lie to you. If a grown-ass man puts his sweaty balls on my neck, I'm pushing him off as well.
Of course.
With Harrison Barnes, if he just hit two more shots in that series, Golden State wins last year. And what I love that Golden State did this year, they did the opposite of what a Mike D'Antoni coach team would do. Everyone said, well, they got rid of Festus Ezeli. They got rid of Bogut. They let Barbosa walk. They have no depth. Convinced. And this is the one thing that I love that they do. They convinced their players to allow themselves to find what JaVale McGee does well and notice they only focus on what he does well. So he plays well. So he stepped in for Festus Ezeli, who was hurt all year. Bogey got hurt 28 seconds into the year for Cleveland. They're both out. Barbosa came back to Phoenix for a check and to live in the city he likes. And the young kids, McCaw and I can't think of the other one, they hit shots. So they developed young players. So they really didn't lose anything. They still have Iguodala and they still have Livingston. And they developed all these other young guys to play.
But here's the issue. That JaVale McGee's played minutes, as you said, regular season minutes. He's played in the playoffs a little bit and played okay. They have not had the toughest row to hoe. And I'll be honest, I think the biggest advantage that Cleveland has is that they will run a 1-3 pick and roll down their throat, and they will force Steph into the pick and roll. And when they pick and roll with Kevin Love and Kyrie, or especially LeBron and Kyrie, and they switch that, Steph can't do anything. Because Kyrie has Steph's number. And if they switch Kevin Durant to Kyrie, Kyrie will eat him up too. And that's going to be a really tough matchup for them. I think the 1-3 pick and roll is going to be the thing that they run to death. I mean, you're just going to see them forcing the Warriors to switch and try to get Steph switched to where they want, and they're just going to attack Steph the entire game. And that was one of the things I think – I agree with you about the Draymond thing. If Draymond didn't get suspended, I think they lose. But I think one of the things that turned when Draymond was gone is that they realized they could out-physical and mess with Steph. And Steph was a little injured last year, but even still, he was – they picked on him game after game. Like, I mean, the last three games of the series that they won, Steph – was the primary point of their offensive attack. And I think they're going to do it again. I don't think Kevin Durant is a much better defender than Harrison Barnes. I think this year he's been better than Harrison Barnes, but over his career he's been probably as good of a defender. And I don't know. I think it's going to be really interesting. Kevin Love's been playing really well. It's going to be a really fun NBA Finals. Like, these teams match up really, really well.
Honestly, I you know what? You and I both do basketball a lot, and I don't see it. Because they're going to do the same thing to Kyrie Irving and his lack of defense. They're going to get him switched onto Kevin Durant. Those two-guard split screens that they run, we saw Klay Thompson score 60 points in a minute and 30 seconds of touching the ball on like 12 dribbles. And I just don't think with the wave of offense, and plus, let's forget, Cleveland is ranked number 20 in defense because they don't play defense. They're playing defense because they're not playing anybody. Golden State is ranked number 2 in defense because they actually do play very good defense. Look, you can't do anything
with
LeBron.
They're definitely the better team.
I just don't think it's going to – look, 2 years ago, I remember looking at someone saying they're going to win in 6. And sure as crap, they were down 2-1. They came back, and obviously Cleveland was real banged up, and they won in 6. I'm thinking 6 again, and I'm being real generous with that. I think you have a team – that is missioned out, and if Cleveland has any shot at this, they have to take game one because if they have to get them when they're a little rusty. But I don't have any faith in Kyle Korver coming off the bench. I don't have a lot of faith in Deron Williams coming off the bench. I don't have – I just don't have it, and I think it's going to come down to what two guys can do. We saw last year Kevin Love played okay, but if they do any type of switching at all – he can't do anything with – I mean, if they don't do any type of switching, he can't do anything with Draymond Green at all. Defensively, Draymond Green is will kill him. He's not physical enough. He'll get pushed down where he wants to. I just don't see it. I really don't. I think this is – for every deficiency Steph has defensively, Kyrie has the same deficiency. And even though I know they try to hide him, and we know they're going to hide him on J.R. Smith. And it's going to take Ty Lue a game or two to realize that, and then he's going to make the league. But this year, man, I just think it's different. I really do. I think you have a team that won last year that had a miraculous comeback with a lot of scenarios against a team that feels like they really shouldn't have lost that last year. And I think, man, KD, man. Like I said, Harrison Barnes hit 2 more shots in that series and Cleveland loses. KD isn't going to miss these shots this year. I just don't see it. You know how the TNT always says they're on vacation or gone fishing? Hell, Golden State could have went fishing for 5 days and came back and still have 5 days to get ready.
Now, I will – you might be right, but I think one thing that's really cool is for the first time ever we're going to see two teams play 3 consecutive years in the finals. And I think it's safe to say that that every single year, the teams were better than the year before.
You're not lying.
So, I mean, it's cool. I mean, it's really built up to this point where I don't think we've ever seen anything like teams this good playing each other. I mean, this could be the final. This is going to be the finals next year. It's going to be the finals the year after that. You know what I mean? We could see 5-6 consecutive years of the same teams going at it, and then we'll be asking ourselves whether or not that's good for the NBA or not.
You know what? Everyone that says it's not, trust me, dominating teams, dynasties, are always good for a league. When I grew up in the eight, watching, you know, my ball comes from the late 70s and the 80s. Lakers went to 9 championship games in like 11, 12 years. That was good for basketball. Boston was in 5 finals in the 80s. That was good for hoops. when the Bulls went 6, that was good for hoops. When the Lakers went another 5 and, you know, in early in 2000s, that was good. It's never bad to have a dominating team. What I find bad is you have teams that try to find different ways than just going out and getting players that can help a certain thing. Like right now, this whole, everyone talks small ball, shooting, shooting. This is what we have to do. This, look what Houston did. They have all these shooters. Houston has the, people get on me in Phoenix about D'Antoni all the time. I think it's the dumbest style of basketball ever played because you got to have more than threes and layups. And if you take a look at what Golden State does, they take mid-range jump shots. Guess what? Those 2 points keep adding up. They defend the line, and they take 2-pointers. Steph can shoot mid-range. KD can shoot mid-range shots. Klay takes mid-range shots. They play a style of basketball, and then they in turn, play defense. Now, there are other teams that can do that, but everyone wants to stretch this and a stretch that and a this and a that. These two teams that are playing now play hoops. They take every shot that's available that's a good shot, period. Once other teams that are close start to get their heads out of their backside, and they start doing that, and they start going out and getting players, and as I circle back around and stop relying on everything that's potential in draft picks, they will actually start to challenge these teams. A team that I think has a good shot at doing this down the line, I think Denver, if they can make a couple right moves and get a couple veterans in, they actually will be okay. I like what Utah's doing. They just have to get some more scoring punch at certain areas. But defensively, they get after you, and they just need more consistent scoring out of someone other than Gordon Hayward if he decides to come back, which I would for $175 million. I like the direction those teams are going.
Paul, I agree with you, but the hard part is this. You said, like, if teams pull their heads out of their backsides and get the idea that you have to play team basketball and find the right system. Yeah, that system works great. Share the ball, keep the ball moving. When you have 3 of the best 5 shooters in the history of basketball sitting on the court at the same time, you can play that everybody gets to take a shot. But that's not realistic for most teams. I mean, you can't have Dennis Schroeder and Kemp Bazemore and, you know, Tiago Splitter and Dwight Howard shooting mid-range jump shots. They're bad at it. You know, they can't take advantage of the same spacing that the Warriors can or even create that spacing. So I agree with you in principle, but it's just really hard to execute, you know?
It really is. But a team like Houston can execute that, but they choose not to. They can get spacing with the James Harden, and they can take shots other than 3-point shots, and they don't. San Antonio, they are an opportunistic 3-point shooting team. They're not a consistent 3-point shooting team, but they play well together, and they don't have 3 of the best shooters. Like 3 years ago, they're the NBA champs, and they didn't have a bunch of 3-point shooters on that team. They're opportunistic with it, and that's the one thing that Greg Popovich, for all the heat he takes for the interviews and all this crap, he gets basketball players that learn how to play in a system where they're effective for the system. This kid that they found that was paying $175 registration fee in the D League 4 years ago, he's a basketball player. And that's what I'm saying. There are certain teams that do it right. And obviously it's unfair to say San Antonio because they've been doing it for 20 years. And even though they didn't get to the finals the last 2 years, they lost a Hall of Famer. This year they lost a Hall of Famer that's at the end of his career. You got a guy in Madden that's been in the league since 1968, and they still challenge with a soft LaMarcus Aldridge and one guy that's a bona fide star. I think there's a different way to do it. I think we've fallen in love so much in basketball this year, over the course of the last 3-4 years, with what analytics are telling us what we need to do to get better. And you have a team like Golden State that, yeah, you use analytics. You have a team like Cleveland, yeah, you use analytics. They have the people in positions where they're going to be successful for the playoffs, not regular season superstars. We don't need a bunch of Dan Marinos. We need some Tom Brady's.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take Dan Marino.
I will too. Best regular season quarterback to ever play.
A lot of fun to watch.
A lot of fun. Look, Houston was a lot of fun to watch. And then what happened?
Yep.
Playoffs rolling around. I was on my boy Ed Smith's show, and he was funny. He asked me to do a playoff breakdown, and I said, oh, man, this is easy. They're a fraud. Hey, Kyle, we have a call. Let's see who we got online with us. Hold on 1 second. This is Courtside with PLR. Who do we have online with us?
Yeah, this is Naj in Atlanta. How dare you call Mike D'Antoni's offense no defensive plan a fraud? That's never worked.
It's a fraud. You've got to do something different. He did that show in Phoenix. It didn't work.
Yeah, you guys define work really harshly, right? I mean, working means winning a championship. I get it, but like, what, seven teams have done that in the last 30 years, eight teams? It's hard.
True. True. But I guess I would put it like this. What gives you the chance to where if there's an injury like we saw with Kawhi, to where you could have one of those outlier Detroit Pistons years if you don't have what you're supposed to have? But he does have the prerequisite. He's had a Hall of Famer each time. Steve Nash there. And, you know, a couple borderline guys, and here he's got Harden, who looks like he's going to be a Hall of Famer. So, I mean, at a certain point, it's on you.
Yeah, personally, I think that he's made the same mistake that he made in Phoenix this year in Houston, which was he overshortened his rotation. You have to play more with more than seven or eight guys. And the odd thing is he has a lot more depth in Houston than he did in Phoenix. I mean, the end of the Suns bench wasn't particularly great, but you've got guys like Montrezl Harrell who played legitimate minutes for him throughout the regular season that just got their time completely cut. Sam Decker, another one who played legitimate minutes for them and could have given them another look and given them more athleticism on the court between those two guys, they chose not to play them. And by shortening his rotation, I think you saw that by the end of the series, James Harden was pretty beat up, and he could no longer function in that offense. Once his shot went, their offense really sputtered, you know, and I think that's the downside that Paul identifies in the offense.
Yeah, they don't adjust for pace in the playoffs. And like you said, Harrell, I mean, he was giving good minutes all season, and he showed that he's a big who can really, you know, give you something. So I have no idea why he became a guy who's just going to get DNPs. But then the other part of it is the usage of Harden. Yes, you have an advantage with Harden, but overuse of that advantage, eventually you're going to wear the guy out, or it's going to be like the last couple of years to where you see these high turnover games in crucial situations. Because, I mean, look, man, you're playing against NBA players. You're not just going to keep doing – this is not the NFL circa 1980. We're going to keep running up the middle and there's nothing you can do about it. Well, yeah, there is something they can do about it. So I don't know, man. I don't like the usage rate, personally.
I agree. Yeah, you know, I think that D'Antoni's going to have to work on it. And depth wins seems to be very relevant in championships. The Spurs are very deep. You know, the Warriors obviously have a ton of depth, even though they lost players. You know, they replaced them with new guys, like Paul was talking about earlier in the show, with JaVale McGee. You know, the Cavs obviously have acquired Darren Williams, Kyle Korver, Andrew Bogut for 28 seconds. The teams who are really successful have made it very clear that the way you do that is by being able to create a system that allows you to not only be successful in the regular season, but allows your team to stay fresh and be ready for, you know, when the playoffs and the physicality of the playoffs come in and you know, they force everybody to adjust. Everyone adjusts in the playoffs, every team. And it's just about whether or not you have the personnel to make the adjustments necessary. And certain teams don't have that personnel and they run out of adjustments they can make and they don't win. And the teams that can make the adjustment and do have the personnel, they do.
Yeah. And if I could throw one more NFL comparison out there, I know people don't like when you do this, but typically, but me saying this is just a you know, my honest thoughts and criticism of D'Antoni. But it has to be said, he's one of the great innovative minds in NBA history. And I'm starting to see a comparison of Sam Weiss, where he comes in, creates the two-minute offense and some of the no-huddle stuff in the NFL, and other people adapted it and it's off of it. And that's kind of what we see with Pop and some of the people who adapted some of D'Antoni's ideas. But it seems in D'Antoni's hands, he just goes too far with them and hasn't balanced it enough. But, yeah, I would say being able to adjust and using more of his roster, stealing minutes with guys, you know, those are things he kind of has to explore because you can't just keep doing this every year to where you're just a regular season team And come playoff time, you know, we know what's coming. Did you guys fall asleep?
No, I'm here.
Okay. I thought I put you guys asleep with the Weiss comparison.
No, absolutely.
I was about to apologize.
Paul have a chance to jump in. Paul is the king of the crossover comparisons. You know, he loves the football to basketball, basketball to football switchover. You know, me personally, I think that when you're looking at what's going on with the modern NBA, if your intention isn't to have it's the same thing with the NFL. If you look at modern sports, and this is kind of where I'm comfortable with the carryover, athleticism coming much more common, elite athleticism is becoming much more common in sports. And as a result, teams are realizing that you have to have versatility. You see it with Dale Buchanan. You see it with Tyrann Mathieu. You see it with Jabril Peppers coming into the draft. And even defensive lineman J.J. Watt, they don't play defensive end. No, he doesn't sit on the edge like Reggie White used to and rush from the same two positions or one position like Bruce Smith, right? He's on the defensive tackle. He'll be in the three. He'll play with his hand on the ground. You know, he'll play standing up on the edge. They know that it's important for him to be multiple, and that's the expression they use, is they want players who are multiple now. And I think that's where you see, you know, your Draymond Greens, he's super multiple. He can defend 1 through 5. You've got Kevin Durant who can play the 3 or the 4. You've got Clay who can play the 2 or the 3. You've got Steph that can play the 1 or the 2 and come off ball. So the multiple looks is something that is becoming extremely important for team success, both in the NFL and in the pros. And if you're falling behind the change, and if you're still stuck in old styles and you're not embracing the fact that you need to have a lot of different ways to attack the same problem, you're not going to win. I mean, the NBA just is punishing teams that don't do that.
Right.
Very true. Well, listen, I appreciate you giving us a call in, and please do it again.
Indeed, man. Y'all have a good night.
Have a good night.
You too. Take care. Hey, Kyle, we're getting close to the end, man. Hey, listen, though, I'm going to say it again. I'm way early. I'm not supposed to do picks until next Wednesday, but I have Golden State in 6. Plain and simple. Simple and plain. And if somehow a miracle happens and they get Boston, they'll sweep them in 3 games.
I think you're 100% right on the winner of the series. I personally don't root for teams inside the Pacific Division other than the Phoenix Suns, so I won't be saying any positive things about the Warriors in terms of my preference, but I think that they'll win in 7, and I think that they have the ability to win in 5. I mean, if the adjustments don't come quick for Cleveland, I think the Warriors are the team to expose every single possible flaw, and they have the coaching and the IQ on the team on the floor to do it. And so, I mean, I could see them sweeping Cleveland. I know that sounds crazy, but I could see them not losing a game. They're that good if they're shooting, you know? So.
Wow, you went further than I did, even though I may have thought that I wouldn't have let that one out. With saying that, tell everyone how they can get a hold of you.
Well, you can see me on Twitter at SunsDebate, and you know, we can chat some basketball there.
All right, man. I know you're a big shot now, but you're going to have to come on with us again, especially with the draft and everything coming up.
You say when. I love to talk prospects. I'm all over that Draft Express.
All right, my man. Hey, listen, I appreciate it. Please, and we'll catch up with you.
Pleasure was mine. Have a great night.
All right, my brother. Take care.
Good night.
One and only Fleegs. Like I said, you guys know him as Kyle Flieger. I know him as Fleegs. That's my man. Well, listen, thank you all for joining us at this special time tonight for Courtside with PLR. Thanks so much. Thanks for calling in on the Kerry Lackey Law Line. And thank you to Maduro's Fine Cigar and Tobacco. Like I said, get in there and make sure you let them know that PLR sent you, and they will take 10% off your cigar purchase. Tomorrow, 1 p.m., The Cave Show.
Make sure you tune in. Got some baseball, football, and basketball to talk about. And you can always get us on Twitter, Instagram, and the Facebook fan page at The Sports Cave, where Cave is always with a K. Also, you can go to thesportscave.com to get caught up on articles or anything else you missed. And if you want me directly, that's PLR on sports. So until next time, this has been Courtside with PLR, and this has been your boy PLR. Everyone have a great night.